going on? This is Tokyo Noah, and you're listening to Chicago Bullseye.
Give it all you got, take your very best shot, and may the best team win. The time is now, the name of the game is action. They're on the floor, and they're ready to score, so let the game begin.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of Chicago Bullseye, and we have the legendary Mitch from the Bull Show on the line today. Mitch, how you doing?
I'm doing great, man. Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it's an honor to have you on. The Bull Show is one of my favorite podcasts of all time, and I'd love to hear if you guys are going to be coming out with an episode soon. It's been a while. I'm hoping that you guys return to form very soon.
Yeah, I don't know. I wish we could say that we could, but... You know, Neil's got a bunch of kids now, got a new job, so it's not looking great for the home team, but we're still watching the Bulls, still following the Bulls, and I'd love to talk about it, so.
Yeah, well, hopefully this latest incarnation of the Beloved will get you guys back together very soon and figure out a way to do it, because you two guys had a great chemistry, and it was one of the shows I listened to quite a bit. I loved it a lot. So it's great to have you on. I think this is the first time you've been on, I believe so.
Yeah, I think so.
Which is hard to believe, but especially since we've communicated so many times and had some interesting debates on Twitter.
Absolutely. But
let's start out a little bit about you, mm-hmm. a little bit about your background as a Bulls fan, yeah. and where you were born, and a little bit about your favorite, you know, team or moment as a Bulls fan.
Oh, cool. Well, you know, I'm from the Chicago, from the South Side of Chicago. Went to Morning Park High School. I've always loved the Bulls since, you know, I'm thinking, like, you know, my first couple memories were probably, I'm in that sweet spot. One of my first memories were the Lakers championship, the win over the championship. So loved basketball. Was not blessed with the height or athleticism to play in high school, but still play basketball pickup to this day. And I just love basketball. I love the Bulls, and have had for a really long time.
Your favorite player of all time, outside of Michael or Scotty?
Yeah, I think my favorite players of all time are probably Joakim Noah and Tony Kukoc. Outside of them. Obviously, everybody in my age is favorite Bulls are Jordan and Pippen, and obviously Rose as well. So taking those three guys out, I think those are probably my two favorite Bulls.
That's great to hear. I love Kukoc, and obviously you can't go wrong with Noah. I always felt you were Ben Gordon fan, which is obviously the...
I'm a big Ben Gordon fan as well. So, you know, I've always loved Ben Gordon. I was one of those guys that were fighting with people on the internet when everybody thought that Ben Gordon sucked. I think me and you were both there.
Fighting the war. I agree. It's amazing. It's amazing to me still when I look back, and I kind of feel this way about the current iteration of the team. There's some players that I feel are like Ben Gordon, not in the comparison of skills, but there are players on the Bulls in their history that, for whatever reason, fans have just focused on the negatives, and there's other ones where they've just focused on the positives. So give you an example. I think a guy in the current team is Denzel Valentine. He's nowhere near as good as Ben Gordon. But all I ever heard to people is you know, talk negatively about him. He's not athletic enough. He's not this. He's not that. But the guy can handle the ball extremely well. He's got great vision. He's a great passer. He can shoot the three. There's a lot that he does well. And I felt the same way about Ben Gordon, is that, you know, everybody focused on his defense and he wasn't tall enough. The guy shot 40% from three every year he was in the league for the Bulls. He was a fantastic scorer. He got to the line. He was really the only guy in the team that could create his own shot, really. He always drew double teams. I mean, it's disgraceful to me that guy didn't get more love than he deserved.
Yeah, I think it's really, you know, coming from, you know, just playing basketball, a guy like that just puts pressure on the defense. I don't know if we've come far enough to kind of measure that in terms of, you know, I know there's something called gravity rating or something like that, but, like, when you have a guy who you just can't leave, you're always thinking about and you're always kind of adjusting your pressure and your scheme toward, it makes it a lot easier for the other guys in the court. So I kind of felt like Ben Gordon was one of those players. So Yeah, I share your opinion on Ben Gordon. I actually share your opinion on Denzel Valentine too. I just think it's a guy that just makes a lot of good decisions. No. And he knows who he is. He's a smart player. You know, I don't know if he'll ever be a star guy, but that's a guy that I think can be a good player for a long time. And I think getting guys like that, you know, it's not a home run when you draft guys that high, but if you get a good player that can play for your team for 7, 8, 9, 10 years, and I think you've done pretty well.
Absolutely. A rotation player at 15, a guy that can be on your team for 7 years, hit threes, you know, and do some positive things on the court, that's what you want at 15. Mm-hmm. It's very rare you're going to get a superstar or a game changer at that point, and they did fine with Denzel Valentine. There's too much, you know, people are just looking for reasons to say this team sucks because of the hatred for the front office, and I'm really, you know, frankly sick of it. But look, that's a good transition. Let's talk a little bit about this team. And you mentioned Ben Gordon, and I feel this way. I completely agree with you as someone who played high school basketball for a few years. I felt this way, too. I hated guarding guys that you had to guard 35 feet out, because especially if they could do other things on the court, because it just puts so much pressure on you to cover that much space and extend the defense. Lauri Markkanen is obviously, I think I'm alone on an island thinking that he has top five talent. It just seems like to me it's really hard to predict where someone's going to be at 25 when you're this good at 20. So what do you think of the team in general right now, but starting out with him?
I think Lauri Markkanen projects to be a really interesting player. I don't know how great he'll be just because he is so young and he's a very interesting player. But the Bulls look like they got a good one in Markkanen. I mean, he's always going to be 7 feet tall. He's always going to be able to shoot like that. So when you have that base, for your offensive skill, you can go really far. So I think Markkanen is going to be a really good player in the NBA.
Isn't he so much more athletic, though, and so much better in the post than I expected? I don't know if you feel the same way.
Yeah, I definitely didn't think he would be this dynamic athletically. I actually did watch a few Arizona games last year, and you know, while I wasn't expecting the Bulls to be able to get him, obviously we had the 14th pick at that time, he never struck me as a really explosive athlete, but I don't know if I would call him I've seen a bunch of ducks in traffic, so maybe I shouldn't say that he's not an explosive athlete. But no, he looks like a really good player. I think he has a really high floor. I don't know where his ceiling's at. He could be really high.
Again, alone on an island here with this statement. I'd love to get your opinion on it. Is the core of Lauri Markkanen, Dunn, and LaVine enough to potentially win a title in 3 to 4 years?
I don't know. I mean, I don't want to say no, right? Because we haven't seen LaVine back from his ACL. We haven't really seen him have the keys to the car, be a top player on the team. I would suspect no, but I don't know if I can say no. There's just so many open variables. I mean, Lauri Markkanen is 20. Chris Dunn is
23.
Yeah, 23. 23. I'd be interested to hear what your expectations are for LaVine. I don't know what LaVine is going to be. I just don't.
Yeah, well, the first thing I hear about LaVine is he's a hard worker. I hear that about Dunn too, and to me, that's the most important thing, right? If you don't have that, you're not going to max out at your ceiling. And everything I've heard from the people I've talked to and the people in the know about these two players, I'm confident they're going to max out whatever their potential is. I'm excited. The reason I basically think that core three can do it, and I'm not as depressed if we don't get, you know, like a franchise-changing player in the upcoming draft, is because I think their talents really do a good job of kind of complementing each other, right? You have Markkanen, who's able to extend the floor, hit the three, and you have LaVine, who's able to shoot at a 38% rate, which is fantastic from three, and still be able to drive and do all those great things. And then you have Dunn, who I kind of compared it with John Wall, like a physical force, a top-notch defender. It really excites me to see what these three could potentially be together, forming the core of what I feel could be a championship team. Of course, you need to make the right, you know, signings outside of those three.
Well, one of the good things that we have going forward that in the Bulls is that I don't think the Bulls are really going to be forced to have those three guys as the core, right? Even if they don't end up with a top three or top five pick, I know that's looking pretty low. They're about a 15% chance of a top three pick right now. You know, this is a pretty decent draft. So if you end up with a guy, you know, like Michael Porter, if you end up with the eighth and ninth pick, that's not terrible.
No.
And obviously the Bulls are eventually going to have caps. You know, they're eventually going to be a player in the free agency. So, you know, I think the things don't look terrible for the Bulls. They look good. You know, I'm obviously the guy that was very disappointed by kind of the decision to tear things down for the last 2 years. But certainly what's giving me a little bit more comfort is that they do have some exciting young players that they need to really build around.
Yeah, Zach LaVine's only 22. He turns 23 in March, and Dunn's 23. He turns 24 in March. You know, so those three guys. I think the biggest key to that statement I made before is that Dunn's, in my opinion, just incredible growth as a player. What do you think of Chris Dunn? What's your take on him, and do you feel he has a ability to be a top 15 player in the league, potential all-star?
So I don't particularly think that he has the ability to be a top 15 player in the league. I look at him as a rich man's Marcus Smart. What I worry about Chris Dunn a little bit is his ability, decision making ability, his turnovers. I'm not sure that he is a guy who can be a really great lead guard, but he certainly has the potential to. And playing with a guy like Zach LaVine, I think sharing the duties with handling the ball, I think LaVine has great point guard skill as well. You might be fine. I'm not one of the guys that think that you have to have a traditional point guard running your team. But if he is a guy who I think has the ball a lot, I worry a little bit about decision making skills. But let's talk about the positive. This guy's an elite defender. He's a guy that can guard, you know, 90, 94 feet. He's a guy who has great athleticism. I think the John Wall comparison is a really, really good comparison. He's got that kind of overwhelming defensive ability and physical ability. And I think he's a guy who can be a really, really, really solid performer for a very, very good team.
It's exciting. So we've kind of touched on these big three, and yet I still have seen on Twitter you make the argument against the Butler trade. And I thought, my personal opinion is that trade was a home run for the Bulls. Obviously, it's done pretty well for Minnesota, too. They're much better than their pathetic 31-win team last year. And so they're obviously a lot better because of Jimmy Butler and his greatness. But in two years, we're going to look back, I think, and when Jimmy leaves and goes to L.A. and say, wow, did we fleece the Minnesota Timberwolves? What say you?
I'm a big opponent of that trade. I mean, for me, you know, I look at it as I kind of have two theories that I think inform that decision. The first is that I just think that there are about 6, 7, 8 players in the NBA that can give you elite performance on the offensive and defensive side of the basketball. I actually don't really think that any of the three Bulls that we have really project to be those elite guys on both sides of the basketball, although they're young enough to kind of get there.
I think Dunn's already elite on the defensive side of ball, and he's starting to show signs in the offensive side. I'm not saying he's in Jimmy Butler's league. I see what your point is.
LeBron, I think those players are, Giannis, yes. I mean, there's aren't many of those guys, you know, Durant, you know, those guys. I think Jimmy Butler's really in that class, so maybe I'm overrating Jimmy Butler. But I think that when you get a hold of a guy like that, you have to keep him. And even if you get a deal that is, you know, you get a bunch of good young players, I just don't think that, you know, two dimes and a nickel add up to a quarter when it comes to basketball. Additionally, I think one of the things that bothers me from a value perspective is that even if these guys kind of work out and all three of them are really good players, you really could have got more for the deal if you look at it at the time of the deal. So if you go through all three of the players, you got the seventh pick in the draft that nobody really thought was seven deep, even though it may end up being more than seven deep, and you had to give up the 14th pick. Chris Dunn was a guy that was the third, probably string point guard on that team. They were trading, they were actively trading for a young kind of point guard in his age bracket, and they eventually got one of near his age bracket. And I think Zach LaVine just wasn't a guy that they saw putting next to Andrew Wiggins and having a really solid defensive team. So I just think those three assets were not high value assets to the Wolves. And dealing an elite chip in Butler, just I don't think that it was worth it. I think it was much more worth it to take Butler and add a great team to him. But I have to applaud the Bulls for these three prospects at least look like they're keepers.
Yeah. So, and did you have Paul George rated higher or lower than Jimmy Butler?
I think that Butler's better.
But and George is younger. I mean, out of the two players, I'd agree with you. I'd have Jimmy slightly higher. I think Paul George is great too, and I think he's exactly what you described. He's a lead on the defensive end and a lead in the offensive end. He's one of those guys in that group. But did you not think that the Bulls did better than Indiana did in the trade at the time?
So this is weird, you talk to my buddies on my Bulls show chat. I actually, and I know this is like, there are 5% of the fans that think this way. I actually thought Indiana did really well with that deal.
At the time.
At the time, actually. And I'm telling you, I know you probably don't believe me, but there are a bunch of guys that I can cite. I think Victor and Oladipo, and you know what it comes back to? I have a belief that's very strange that Russell Westbrook is like the most overrated player in basketball. And that I understand it's wild. I know it's
super hot. No, it's fair. Yeah, it's your opinion. I mean, I've heard other people make this argument too, and people who I respect make the argument. So I understand what you're saying. Go on.
And again, it comes back to like playing basketball. Like, I would hate to play basketball with that guy. I just think that looking at a guy that yells at people when he's not getting your 10th assist, and he just puts so much pressure. I just feel like there's a history of guys leaving Oklahoma City and getting better. And I think that's what, I mean, you talk about we're kind of really getting to a lot, but you talk about the Kevin Durant thing, right? Them leaving Oklahoma City, him leaving Oklahoma City. I think it's had a lot to do with it. It's just not fun to play with Russell Westbrook.
Yeah, but he joined...
So for me, I wasn't down on Victor Oladipo. I still looked at Victor Oladipo. No, Victor Oladipo leaving Orlando was a guy that people thought could be a really great young player. And I'm not surprised to see what Victor Oladipo is doing right now when he's not playing with Russell Westbrook. I didn't hate that trade. I thought that you get those, and I actually like the bonus as well coming out of college. And that might have been because I made a bunch of money that year on Gonzaga. But I like those two players.
So are you telling me you would rather have Oladipo and Sabonis ahead of Markkanen, Dunn, and LaVine?
I think at the time...
Not right now. No way.
But at the time, I thought Oladipo, and I still think this now, that Oladipo is probably going to be the best player out of those five guys.
I don't know about that. I agree he's had a fantastic year. First of all, Oladipo was played, for the Magic. He was nowhere near as good as he is today, right? And so
he was protected that way, right? He's like done, right? Like, how old was he when he left the Magic?
Yeah, that's a good point. He had the 1 year in Oklahoma City, which I agree with you. It's not easy to play with Russell Westbrook. I understand that. I kind of agree with it. There's challenges there. That said, they were within a game of basically going to the finals and probably winning it, right, when he was there with Durant. And Durant leaves, great. It turned out great for him, for the best team in the NBA. It's not like, it was almost a layup, right, to leave for Golden State Warriors. I guess they at the time they weren't the best team since they actually lost to Cleveland. But let's be honest, they would have probably won with or without Durant at least another time.
Oh, I don't know, man. I think you had an open question between Oklahoma City with Durant versus Golden State. I mean, didn't Oklahoma City have them down 3-1? I mean, at what point was Golden State better? Yes, but I think it was unusual that Kevin Durant would leave a team that good to go to Golden State, and I think some of that. I agree with you,
but I'm saying, where's this other history of guys leaving Oklahoma City outside of Oladipo and Durant, and they got better? Like, I don't think there is a massive history of that. Like, I understand. I think people have gone overboard on saying how much it sucks to hate Westbrook, because you know what else is great? Having wide open 3-pointers that you can nail, and the team doesn't have enough of that, right? They don't have enough guys that can just hit outside shots. I mean, that's been a problem with them for years.
I don't want to rag on Russell Westbrook too much. I still think he's a great player. I just think that, like, for me, I just had a stronger opinion. I think that most people around the trade thought that, like, okay, Oladipo is a guy who that's good as he's going to get. And, you know, this is Victor Oladipo. And I just didn't. I almost deleted those last couple of seasons out of my head. I still looked at the guy at the right of the side. I mean, the guy at this point, it's what, 25 years old? So we thought that a guy who was 24 probably at the time had just, like, peaked. Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. Like,
yeah.
I didn't understand it. Like, I just didn't understand it. So, for me, I mean, Victor Oladipo is probably going to be an all-star this year. He's a great player. They got a player that I think could be 90% of Paul George. And
that's good. No, they did good. They did a lot better than most. But I think most people at the time, I'd say 90% at the time, even though the Bulls were absolutely torched or, you know, roasted for that trade, afterwards, I think most people said, wow. I mean, most people viewed the Indiana trade, to me, as worse than the Bulls trade.
Yeah, I think that's right.
And I think now most people would still view it that way, despite Oladipo's greatness and how good he's been. Yeah. I still think they'd say, well, Markkanen is, and you know, Dunn is, because Dunn has progressed so well. That's why.
But I guess my deal is this. The Bulls could have gotten more, right? So even if Markkanen, even if Dunn, even these guys project, these were secondary assets that the Wolves were giving up for an elite prospect. The Wolves didn't, and I have to go back and kind of think about what else they could have finagled. But the Wolves weren't coveted pieces. None of these people were coveted pieces.
Well, let's make this argument, because I've had this discussion in the weeks leading up to that trade. I was on with Waddle and Sylvie almost every day saying that there's a deal with Minnesota for Wiggins, because I felt at the time that, you know, Wiggins to me and Butler, you know, Wiggins is a poor man's Butler in essence. You know, that's what he's going to be at his best. And, you know, I thought it was a little bit of a repetitive position, and I think there was I thought it was possible that the Bulls could get the 7 in Wiggins for Butler. And now I've had this discussion today, or I've asked this question a few times. I'd like to get your opinion on this. If Tibbs called today and said, I'll give you Wiggins and his massive contract for Chris Dunn, what would you say?
Well, here's the thing about it. I would say no, because I don't think Wiggins is that good.
I agree. But he's an asset that most people said, no way they should give him up. No way. And the Bulls actually were smart enough and better. They did better than getting Wiggins for Dunn. I think Dunn's got a higher ceiling than Wiggins. I agree with you.
I think Levine actually has a higher ceiling than Wiggins. I don't think Wiggins is that good. Wiggins was not the guy that I was coming. I look at what Indiana got, you know. It's a weird deal, right? But look at what happened with Boston, right? So, depending on, you know, I'm having this argument in my group chat as well, but depending on who you thought was better, IT or Kyrie, I think a lot of people think Kyrie, but some people think IT. So both of those teams were able to trade that pick and get a guy that you think is 95% of, at worst, or 90% or 80% of that player right then.
Who's saying IT is anywhere in the league of Irving right now? I mean, that's insane. Who's saying that?
Do you think that? Look at what IT did last year.
Yeah, yes, what he did last year. He's a broken player now with a bad hip. And clearly, the Cavs are not better with IT.
I don't think we know that yet.
Oh my
god! I mean, we literally don't have the games to see that.
Are you?
If we say that, we can maybe say that in the year when the IT looks, you know, totally bad and he looks physically unable to play. But if IT is back healthy, IT was a better player than Kyrie is right now.
I disagree 100%. I mean, he was in a situation where, you know, he didn't have LeBron on his team and he could be the alpha dog and do that. But this year, I mean, Irving's shown that he can be that guy. And I thought he showed it when he was at the Cavs. He won a title. I mean, people like to diminish his efforts there. I mean, good, they don't win the title without Irving. It's insanity to me.
Well, here's the thing about it. I don't think you're besmirching Irving by saying he's similar to a guy that averaged 30 points a game and was fifth in MVP voting. People forget how good Isaiah Thomas was last year, and maybe it was all the coaching. I mean, maybe that was it. But like, that dude was elite last year. So I'm comparing Kyrie Irving to a dude that was elite. I don't know the health stuff. The health stuff could be totally messed up, and you know, I don't know. I don't know what's going on there.
Well, here's why I'll counter. As bad as Irving was defensively, I think Thomas is worse. I think Irving's better. I think Irving's way better on the defensive end, and that will never change because you can't change your physical, you know, how tall he is. So
that's a concern with IT. If you say Kyrie's better because of the defense, right? I'm not going to argue with you. You can go at IT, but I mean IT last year. The healthy version, I think, more than made up for those defensive kind of adequacies by just destroying your team.
He had a great.
He was a killer.
Yeah, he had a great year last year, no doubt about it. I think they're close enough. I think most people would at least make this argument. They're close enough that if you look at other things, then hey, maybe you know you can make a judgment based on that. And here's what I do. Irving's 25 years old. Thomas is 28. That's 3 years. That's a huge difference. Thomas is already in his prime, probably in the middle of it. Irving's 25. In my opinion, most guys don't hit their prime until 26 to 29. That's when you usually see it. He's still just beginning it. He's younger. He's 3 years younger. There's no doubt I'd rather have Irving than Thomas. No doubt.
Listen. That's fine. I'm not going to argue with you there. I will say, if you think a guy doesn't hit their prime at 29, then certainly you should probably feel a little bit differently about the Oladipo deal, right?
Yeah. There's also the other, I mean, Oladipo played at Indiana. There's also that there, which I think was another factor that I think helps the trade, you know, helped it at the time. You know, but that said, I still feel the Bulls did better. I still feel like, in retrospect, I think the trade was... All right, now let's say Butler walks. Are you going to look back and say, well, let's take another step back. Are you comfortable signing Jimmy Butler to a 5-year max deal at the age of, 29, 30? You think that's going to be a good thing? Yes. That's something you want to be a participate in?
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely.
With Jimmy all the mileage he has.
Jimmy Butler has done nothing but prove that he's a durable, hardworking player that takes his craft very seriously. I don't think you are going to have the deterioration. I almost feel more confident about giving Jimmy Butler that deal than almost any other player. That dude works. That dude was a third option defensive stopper going into college and turned himself into an Olympia two-way athlete. I feel 100% confident that guy is going to compete all throughout that contract. No question.
I think there's major problems on the horizon. I don't think Jimmy's not a great teammate. That's just a fact. I think the worst thing he can do to anybody is to question their work ethic and what he did and what Wade did last year. You know, the further I get away from it, the more ridiculous I look back and think about it. To question someone's work ethic is just, as a teammate in the press, it's fine to do it behind closed doors. but to do it in the press is so pathetic and so wrong. And it's not maybe Jimmy's fault. I just don't think he's, you know, used to being a leader and the best player in a team.
Yeah. Absolutely. There are issues there, but you work with those issues, right? That's the whole, you know, the Bulls are paying millions of dollars probably in salaries, right, to coaches and staff and organizational people. You work through that. And part of that deteriorating culture, I think, had to do with what was going on at the top. You know, Fred Hoiberg was not, and it was a tough job. It was a tough job. Rajon Rondo is a crazy character. Dwayne Wade is a crazy character. Jimmy Butler is a crazy character. Bobby Portis is a crazy character. Nico's got something going on. So I'm not saying it was an easy job, but that's what we pay the coaches millions of dollars to keep that stuff in line. Right? That's what we pay them in line. That's what we pay them to do. So it's half of it's X and O's, half of it's the personality. So I just think that you coach through that. You got to have control of your team, and you got to do a better job of getting your guys on the same page. And Fred Hoiberg just had a horrible year last year. Aside from the X and O's, the organization, I don't understand what that storyline wasn't there.
Well, I think the storyline that was he wasn't allowed to coach. He wasn't making the decisions. It was Jimmy and Wade making decisions on the offense every time they brought the ball down, and that's why I think I still feel the team should have been a lot better. To me, the biggest issue was Nico shot 30% from three for his first 200 attempts. And the team needed him to perform. If he was shooting last year, like he shot this year at 48%, between 45 and 48, we would have won 50 games. I'm certain of it. That was the biggest problem with that team. They didn't have enough outside shooting.
It's funny. I'm kind of with you on the Nico thing. You know, I had a really interesting conversation with a couple guys on Twitter, and there are a lot of guys, the stat guys, that really love Nico, and one of the things that you hear is that when you put Nico in the right position, he can really succeed. He can be this kind of really great player, but the problem is I don't think Nico is a good enough player to have to be a guy that has to be put in the right position. He's just not a player that I think can be that really high and low guy. Right? He has to have the shots. He has to kind of be the focal point of the offense, and I prefer a player that's a little bit more versatile in terms of having to go through him. You know?
No, guys, I agree 100%.
Like, and he's a better player than Denzel Valance right now, but just like Denzel Valance is a guy that I don't think had to have like super crazy usage to be like an effective player to do his thing. And I wish Nico was a little bit more like that.
Yeah, like basically their argument is Nico, I mean, they're not doing enough with Nico, and it's like Nico's not. My counter is he's not good enough. If he's your A option, your team isn't good enough to win a title or even close. Like, you know, he's not good enough. Period. Like, he's doing great right now over 10 games. Would he consistently be able to do that over the course of a season? I don't know. I say there's nothing that would indicate that he would. He's one of the most, like I was saying, there was nothing to indicate in his career that he would continue and be consistent. He's been nothing but inconsistent and horrible in the playoffs. I have zero faith in Nico Mirotic, and I'm glad they're going to trade him for, you know, whatever they get for him.
Listen, I'm not going to die on a Nico Hill. I agree that he's a super inconsistent player. I wish that he had more consistency, but he doesn't. But I don't think that team, there were more things going on than Nico Mirotic, right? He wasn't very good for the majority of the year, but you also had, I think, you know, I was so happy to have Dwayne Wade here. You know, like I said, I'm a Southsider with Sporting Park High School, not too far from, you know, I grew up far, far south, not too far from Robbins. Was so happy to see this guy come, and I just think that he gave us about 60% effort, and I was just expecting way more. And I think the stick with Rondo. Rondo had flashes of being a pretty decent player, but obviously the fit wasn't great, and the coaching just was kind of super chaotic. So,
well, I know I'm alone on an island here again for like the 10th time on this podcast. at least you're in agreement with me. I was ecstatic that Dwayne Wade came to this team. I thought Dwayne Wade actually had a good season. He finished the year hurt. And obviously they didn't overwork him, because that's what you should have done with Dwayne Wade. The guy still played average 30 minutes and averaged 18 points per game. If you just closed your eyes and pretended it wasn't Dwayne Wade and said, yeah, this guy averaged 18 points in 30 minutes and just pretended he wasn't him, I think the comparison to his former self is what hurt him. But just as a basketball player,
the salary,
he was fine.
Salary, right? We paid him $50 million too, right?
Yeah, but who cares?
Way
it's
he
over 2 years.
More money than Jimmy Butler has both, right? So I mean, listen. If we would have brought him in a role to kind of be like how he's operating on the Cavs, it would have been a great season for Dwayne Wade. But that's not what the role we brought him in to be, right? We brought him in to be one of the two best players on the team, and we paid him like that. And he wasn't able to meet those expectations. And like you said, it was probably predictable, right? He's an older player. But if we're going to talk about the team being that talented and that team underperforming based upon that talent, that's based upon, I think, a calculation that Dwayne Wade, maybe not his Miami prime self, but a little bit better than what we got last year.
I would still disagree to this end. The whole goal was to win in the playoffs. And regardless of what anyone says, I keep on hearing these ridiculously stupid arguments. Like, those first two games in Boston never happened. I was there. I was in Boston. I watched them happen. The Bulls pounded the Boston Celtics and were up 2-0. And it was and Dwayne Wade was a big part of those games, especially game two. He absolutely stuck the knife right in our hearts in game two. And he played fantastic in game three in the first half. The reason the Bulls still lost that series, obviously Rondo got hurt, but Jimmy didn't step up. You know, that's the series where I still go back to game three. I maintain game three is the worst performance. I thought it might have been Kobe's game seven when they won their second title in the Gasol team when he was 6-for-24. I thought that could have been the worst of a big-time player. I think Jimmy's game three surpassed it. I have no idea what he was doing in that game. It was the worst performance I've ever seen.
So here's a guy's had a bad game, right? But and there's no doubt that Jimmy Butler had a bad game.
You were there?
Game three. But listen, this team was it 41-41?
Yes. 41, well, yeah.
They were 41-41?
Yeah.
If they don't get an elite performance from Jimmy Butler the entire season, they don't make the playoffs. And for a team that is supposed to be that talented, I just can't say that, like, Jimmy Butler having one bad game in the playoffs should be like one of these shining things, the reason why the Bulls underachieved.
It wasn't one that bad season, game. Like, they had game five right there, the fourth quarter. It was a one or two point game right there. That's where you got to step up in Boston. Make it happen.
So was there one game in one quarter? I mean, like, so the Bulls shouldn't have been in a situation where they were playing the number one team in the first place. That's crazy that the Bulls were a 41-win team.
Yeah, that's true.
The team would have performed the way they should have performed, right? So that's what happens when you sign a guy for $50 million and expect him to be a number two guy, and it ends up being a guy that is a situational guy. Or you've got to build your team better. And I just don't think that, and, you know, I look at this situation a lot like what happened in Houston, right? So, you know, you talk about terrible playoff performances. Look at James Harden's terrible playoff performance at the end of that season, at the end of the playoffs.
Yeah.
But what do? They say, listen, not that James Harden is a guy who's a bum and he can't close for us and we got to get him out of town. No, let's give him some help. Let's make it a situation where it's not just always on him closing games. And if he doesn't play well, it's over for us. That's why they went and go get Chris Paul. Now it's easier for James Harden. He's still the same dude, but it's easier for him. That's what the Bulls, I would have liked to do. You go get a piece, and you take some of the burden off your shoulders.
I understand what you're saying. I think the issue is, I think James Harden is much more willing to defer and set up other guys than Jimmy is. Jimmy is, I'm the alpha, and no one, I think he's at this point, he kind of achieved that point in the middle of the Bulls, you know, 2015 part there that ended so badly with Tibbs. And, you know, that's where all the frustration is. Let's be honest about this, Mitch. The Bulls had the core three, and all this frustration around the team and all the anger around the team. The fact is, the reason the Bulls didn't win any titles is because two of those three, in the beginning and middle of two long-term contracts, just deteriorated greatly. Rose was, in the beginning of his contract, was never even close to where he was, to the point where he is today at 29, and he's done. And Noah, in the middle of his contract, long-term contract, deteriorated to a point he's basically out of the NBA. That's never happened. I can't ever recall that happening to an NBA team, to have two core pieces like that go from MVP and defensive MVP to you're out of the league in 4 years. It's never happened, as far as I know. And then there's Jimmy, right? So he did have those guys. That happened. It hasn't worked out. I don't think Jimmy's a guy now who's going to be built to work with these guys. I don't think Towns likes him. And I know everybody, all the Tibbs lovers are out now. It's January. Tibbs is king of January. They're all telling me I was wrong. Let's get into this now to wrap it up, because you're already giving me 30-plus minutes, 40 minutes already we're at. And let's get into Tibbs now. So Tibbs is, you know, he's won, I think they won, what, 6 in a row after a couple embarrassing losses. They're back. They're a 4 seed. And I love this argument. So they're half game now behind San Antonio. And everybody's reminding me of that. And my counter to that is, why are you behind San Antonio? San Antonio's best players played 181 minutes. This guy's got 4 of his starters in the top 12 in total minutes. Who on San Antonio, you got even Aldridge is like has played less minutes than his top 3. And the next guy on the total minutes is Paul Gasol at about 1,000. You don't think the talents of Towns and Wiggins and Jimmy Butler, why are you behind them? You know, that's my counter. What do you say about the beloved Tibbs and the Timberwolves?
I'm a Thibodeau guy. I tried to follow the Wolves. I was pissed off, man. I was pissed off about the Thibodeau thing. I was pissed off about the Butler thing. I was one of these guys that, you know, was a giant Bulls fan and thought this iteration of the management was tearing my team apart. So, you know, I'm a guy that paid a little attention to the Wolves. I'll take a couple steps back. You might know this from our days in the Bulls show. I was always a guy that was never convinced that the minutes thing, and I know this is unusual, right? Me and you are both in the sense, similar in the sense that we are not afraid to take a hot take. I was never convinced that the minutes thing was that big of a deal. I mean, guys work out, you know, they play, they do stuff in practice. Like, I just never took the minutes thing as a huge deal. I thought that the Jimmy Butler, the Derrick Rose tore his ACL, is that minutes? You know, Judson Noah, the 7-footer, it's not unusual for 7-footers to have, you know, lower leg injuries. That's not unusual. I thought those were just freak accidents.
No,
see, but that's it.
Yeah.
But that's it. Let's say what that's it. Management could have easily stepped in Chicago, and they did it during the last year, right? And say, here, these are the minutes limits. This is it. This guy can play 34 minutes. This guy can play 32 minutes. This guy can play 33 minutes. And that's it. And you solved your worst problem with Tom Thibodeau. You solved it.
But that's exactly what they did. They did that. And that's why we had the situation of him crying to his buddy Jeff Van Gundy that they're meddling with his coaching. That's why.
Well, hey, listen. You ignored it. You let it roll off your back.
Oh.
Yes. I know they got you fired up. I know you were in the room every time we had a national game. Where he wouldn't even wait for the Bulls to be playing. But he let that stuff slide off. Jeff Van Gundy isn't being paid by the Bulls. He's not stopping you from winning games or losing games. You let it roll off your back.
No,
he's
influencing. Those guys influence, their opinion has influence on tons of people, millions of, a lot of people that matter too, writers.
It's you wouldn't play in the games, right? Not saying not you, Fred. I'm saying your organization is playing the games. That's it.
Yeah.
So whoever writes whatever, it doesn't matter. Look at what's happening with the Patriots today, right? They can write whatever they're going to write about the Patriots, talk about their breaking up. I got a prediction. Patriots are going to win the Super Bowl next year. It does not this year. It does not matter. It does not matter what the writers say. It's still a game that you got to play. You got to get more bats than the other team. And people can write on Twitter, and people can write in the papers, whatever they want to write. It's still a game. And that's what the Bulls got distracted. Got distracted with Tom Thibodeau. They could have solved the situation. They were smart in solving the situation, but they let the other stuff get them all riled up and fired up, and they got all passionate about it, and they traded a guy or let go of a guy that everybody knew was a good coach.
Well, yeah, well, that's debatable now. I think that's definitely debatable. I think he was a good coach. I think the game has passed him by to a certain extent. He was a defensive wizard, and that hasn't shown up in Minnesota. That's what he was supposed to be, right? He's not an offensive coach. He's a defensive coach, and his teams have sucked defensively. Even this year, they've sucked defensively.
Well, I think the team, I mean, I think that personnel is not.
Oh,
they've got two guys, like you said. Yeah. They got two guys that just aren't good defenders.
That's what he's supposed to be. I mean, that's the narrative. He had no talent here in Chicago, and he made everything so much better, which is the biggest bunch of BS I've ever heard. He had Taj Gibson and Jakeem Noah in their prime, who were good before he showed up. Before he showed up. And then everybody's rewriting it like, what a job Tibbs did. The team between Vinny Del Negro's last year and the team that Tom Thibodeau took over was night and day. They added Kyle Korver that summer. They added... every guy was older. Every guy was better. All those guys added on the bench mob. It's insanity that, like, we've rewritten everything. Like, oh, look at all the magic Tibbs did. Tibbs didn't do any magic.
Come on.
Did he do magic with Snell? What kind of...
Let's take a couple steps back here. Let's take a couple steps back here. Should Tom Thibodeau be given full credit for everything that happened during that bowl season? No.
He pretty much was.
We can't at least agree this. Let's agree in the middle. That Tom Thibodeau was a good fit to that team.
Yes, absolutely.
That team along
for 2 years.
Now,
yes.
if you want to say that, you know, I don't think the team was untalented. Do I think the team was as talented as the team they were competing in? No. At the top of the league, I don't think so.
Oh my God, I can't disagree with you more. Hold on 1 second. Let's take one step back, because you made a statement earlier about the minutes, which I used to feel that way too, Mitch. I used to be that way too. Yeah. Like, in my day, Jordan would play 40 minutes a game. I'd be like that, and I'd hear all my, you know, my uncles talk about Cy Young and all that BS. And then I was always defending Dusty Baker for the way he threw all the Cubs pitchers on the ground. You know, all that stuff. The fact is, the science, it's not a question anymore. This is like climate change. There's not an argument anymore. This is a fact. That's why all the smart coaches in the league, none of these guys, Popovich, Kerr, are playing their players into the ground. None of them, but Tom Thibodeau. So it's either all those other guys are dumb and Tom's right, or vice versa. Tom's the dummy. And here's a fact, too. When Noah in 2012, I encourage you, go, and I encourage anyone who hasn't heard me make this argument before, go and look at December of 2012, the year after Rose hurt his ACL, and look at all the back-to-backs the Bulls had. And look at the minutes that Noah played. A center playing 42 minutes one night, 41 minutes on a back-to-back. That's insanity. And then at game 60, he goes out with leg problems. And everybody's like, ah, bad luck on Tom. Tom's at fault. Tom's the reason Noah went out at game 60 because of his stupid idiocy. The guy was dead to me in the playoffs.
I'm sorry.
Oh, man, God. I cannot believe we're still having this argument that... I thought that this year everyone had finally come around to this.
I'm not around. But here's my point. My point is that maybe you're right. You're probably right. Right? There are a lot of smart guys who do that. To me, that's on the organization. That comes back to the organization just not doing the things that need to be done. If it was so flagrant, if it was so crazy that Joakim Noah was playing these big minutes through December, and he was being killed, and he was bound to get injured. Why can't the organization step in like they did a couple of years later and say, hey, these are the minutes of
the They did, Mitch. That's the problem.
Did Vinny Del Negro get choked over that?
Here's how Tom Thibodeau does his work. He befriends every beat writer and every national writer, and he's your best friend, like he is for Joe Cowley. And he reads everything that's written about him, every single thing. And then he manipulates all that stuff. And the Bulls, or the front office and Paxson, don't do business like that. They don't do it in the papers. They don't care what the papers say. And so
let's have that point. Let's argue that point. They do care. Because if they didn't care, Tom Thibodeau would still be here, and he'd be given the minutes, and he can bitch and whine all he wanted to. But if they didn't really care, that wouldn't have mattered. The Bulls care about what's in the media. You can't say that, Fred.
Well, Thibodeau cares much more about what's said in the media than the Bulls do.
Maybe he does. Maybe he cares much more. But the Bulls care, too.
Well, of course. I'd say everybody cares to a certain extent. But the Bulls don't do as nearly as good a job as Tom Thibodeau did of manipulating the media. Every story you hear about is how he wanted Draymond Green. Oh, he wanted. You never hear about how much he argued how much he begged for them to get McDermott. You never hear that story. That's a fact.
That's listen. That could be totally true, right? But I think great organizations like the Patriots, like the Spurs. I mean, I don't know about the Spurs, but I think a great organization doesn't have to care about what the beat writers say. And if the Bulls weren't like responsive to that, it wouldn't matter. It wouldn't matter. You know, it just wouldn't matter. I just don't think the Bulls got rid of Tom Thibodeau for the basketball reason.
Well,
I think they got rid of him because they just didn't get along. And for me, that's a shame.
But the reason they didn't get along is exactly what we're seeing right now in Minnesota. Again, I'll say this. He's got Taj Gibson 12th in the league in total minutes. At 32. Is that insane? Is that, Mitch, do you agree with that?
I don't know. Is it saying, I don't know.
It's completely insane. It's completely insane. Listen, I know he's king of January right now. Let's have this, you and I get on a cast in April. And when one of these guys is hurt, and we're looking back and looking, man, they don't look as strong heading in the playoffs as they once did. Yeah, that's why. Because Taj Gibson shouldn't be 12th in the league in total minutes. It's insanity.
Listen, people are saying, listen, I'll make your argument for you. People are saying it now. I've heard arguments talking about how the Wolves aren't the greatest fourth quarter team. The reason why they aren't the greatest fourth quarter team is because of the minutes that they play. And you can look at their performances versus the first three quarters, and they have one of the worst drop-offs to the fourth quarter.
Yes.
And I did this a couple weeks ago. I haven't looked at the number.
It's way better. They're 17th in January. They're better, but they're, you know, it's still bottom half.
But I'll say this. That's what's happened with the Wolves. The Bulls could have fixed that situation, right? He didn't have the power in Chicago as he does in Minnesota. We could have fixed that situation. We could say, here are your minutes limits. You got to follow them. You can whine at Jeff Van Gundy if you want. You can whine at whoever you got, Casey Johnson if you want. It doesn't matter. This is your Minnesota. That's what the Bulls could have done. I think we'd have had a pretty good coach.
Maybe the team had turned him off already. Noah couldn't stand him. I just wish we lived in the alternate universe where Noah and Dang accepted his contract offers in 2016. I just wish we were in that universe where Noah and Dang are making almost max deals with Towns and Wiggins. I wonder how many wins that Minnesota would have now. I think the guy, when you get down to it, the biggest problem I've had with him, he said, I saw this quote, I'm going to read it to you right now. I just saw it. So he recently had a quote. I think people sometimes get caught up in the wrong stuff. The most important thing is winning. That's what that's his quote. Yeah, Tom Thibodeau cares about winning the next game. That's it. He doesn't see anything in the future. He doesn't see developing rookies. Because if you want to win the next game, you're probably going to minimize your rookies playing. Because they're going to make mistakes and that all rookies do make. And he can't see the forest through the trees or the big picture. And that's my biggest problem with him. What's that?
The organization's got to help him with that.
Organization now. He's the guy running it. So yeah, I expect them. We're at his high point now. They're awesome. They're the fourth seed in the West, a very weak West. Have you noticed the fifth seed in the West is 22-20? I mean, goodness gracious, what happened in the West?
It's a little strange.
It is very strange. Hey, man, Mitch, I can't thank you enough for joining the Chicago Bulls.
This was
a blast.
This was fun, man.
Yeah.
We got to do this more often.
Yeah, we absolutely do. Absolutely.
I want to say this real quick. You know, you are one of the gems of Bulls Twitter. You're one of the gems of Bulls fandom. Your energy, your excitement, you make it more fun to be a Bulls fan. I thank you so much. Keep doing what you're doing, Fred.
Thanks a lot, Mitch. I appreciate it. And you know what bothers me a little bit? Like, I think I've developed this reputation as this like dumb fan that's just going to cheer for whatever. You know what I mean? Like that's kind of devolved into that. I think I got with the sea red thing, and I'm like, you know, people that didn't know my anti-Heinrich stance and all the other stuff. That's a big part of me. There's no, you know, just blind fan that would be so anti-Heinrich and so anti-Thibodeau. All this other stuff that I think is a little bit more complex. But I appreciate you saying that, Mitch. Honestly, that's great.
Never be afraid to go left when everybody else is going right. I try to do that. never be afraid to do that, man. You get more real estate that way, all right?
Sounds great, brother. Awesome, man. Hey, thanks, Mitch. We got to do it again soon. Take it easy, man.
All right, talk to you later.
Bye-bye.